You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton with Ashley Thornburg. We're in our Fargo studio, and in our Bismarck studio, Sue Balcom joins us once a week to talk about Main Street Eats.
Sue, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Happy New Year.
Oh, yes. Gosh darn, it's time to start all over again, isn't it?
I think you mean, yay, we have a blank slate to work. Okay, fine.
And there might be a cake for the day. How's
well,
that?
You know, housekeeping, you know, like at the end of the year, you're like, I gotta clean my house out for a new year. And you always have to make cake. I don't know if it's because my husband has a birthday shortly after Christmas, but I practice making cakes about this time of year. And there are traditions around having a happy New Year's cake.
Such as,
okay, now I've got to get this right. Vassilopita is a Greek New Year's cake that's associated with this saint named Saint Basil. Now, unlike Beelzebub and all those terrible, terrible German Christmas saints, we have this really nice guy named Saint Basil. And the tradition or the story behind this is during a terrible famine, there was an emperor that put a tax upon the people of Caesarea. And Saint Basil, the great archbishop, took pity on all of these poor people. And so he kind of went and lobbied the emperor to give back all of this stuff that he had taken, coins and jewelry and stuff, for this big, huge tax. Now, rather than embarrass himself and the emperor, he decided to bake the treasures in a bread or a cake, and he distributed these pieces of cake, and by some mysterious divine intervention, all of the right stuff got back to the right families. And so it was this miracle of getting their jewelry and gold back that has this tradition of a Happy New Year's cake, in which you actually bake a coin, and whoever gets that piece of cake with the coin in it supposedly has the best New Year.
Or a trip to the dentist, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to figure out what they make coins out of nowadays. And do you have to wrap it in – well, no, you wouldn't want to wrap it in plastic. Because
no.
That would be kind of icky and gummy.
Well, we cook with copper and nickel, so I think we're okay.
Yeah.
But pennies are no longer copper, are they?
Well, they're copper-coated, I think. They might be steel underneath that. I don't know.
That is a good question. I suppose you could bake a chocolate coin in there, and whoever got that blop, you know.
That's a good way to do it.
Is the coin. But if you're going to bake cake, which I am practicing, I practice every year my chocolate cake with chocolate ganache in between like six layers and then buttercream chocolate frosting on the top. Oh, my goodness. So I have some cake tips for you.
Okay. If
you're interested. One of the things that I found just recently is something called pan release. I hate to grease and flour pans. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but I just hate to do that.
It never quite works.
Well, and you should cut a piece of parchment. And, you know, if you're going to do that, if you're going to put grease, I think I hate touching that grease is what I hate. But if you're going to grease and flour your pans while you're making a chocolate cake, don't use flour, but sift cocoa in there instead.
Really?
Because it works the same as the flour, and it doesn't make your cake white on the bottom.
And it tastes good.
And it adds some flavor, absolutely. But I have a recipe for what's called pan release, which I've been using now for a couple months, and I really like it. And it's simply a half a cup of flour, a half a cup of canola oil, and a half a cup of solid shortening that you whip together with a hand mixer. And you can store it in your cupboard. You can store it in your refrigerator, but it will get a little harder. And then you just use a brush, and you brush this on the bottom and halfway up the sides of your cake pan, and it works. And you don't have to touch anything. You can use your, you know, pastry brush to do this.
Does it matter what kind of flour?
Nope, it does not matter.
Probably
what kind
just
of flour.
Whatever's cheapest.
Yep.
So flour, oil, and Crisco?
And Crisco, yep.
Huh.
Equal parts, and you can keep this, you know, almost forever. If you bake as much as I do, nothing lasts forever. we're always running to some store for something.
Sure.
And then once you get that cake baked and it comes out of your pan and it's all like really cool, if you don't have a splitter for your layers, because you know the more layers you have with the more chocolate ganache in there, the better that cake gets and the higher it gets. And then people are like, ooh, ah. They're never straight though. Mine always look like the leaning 14 Tower of Pisa. But if it tastes good, who cares, right? But you can use dental floss if you don't have a cake splitter, and rather than a knife, because you just kind of wrap it right around the whole cake and then pull on the opposite ends and it'll boom right through the middle and you'll have your split cake.
And we get nice flavored
minty flavored dental floss.
So you can add a little flavor to your.
But you still need to very carefully take that layer off.
Correct.
So it doesn't fall into pieces.
But your cake shouldn't fall into pieces when it's baked properly.
Well,
just
that's
saying.
The problem I have.
So don't overbake it. That's when it gets kind of crummy. But here's something that'll help you with your layers: is something called a cake strip. And you can make your own out of old towels or old T-shirts, but you can also
sounds tasty.
You can buy them at Joann's or any place that sells Wilton cake things. And they're basically a strip that you soak in cold water and you wrap it around the outside edges of your pan. So then your cake will bake more evenly and you won't get that dome on the top. You know, your edges won't dry out so fast. And I'm telling you, they really work. I just am so excited about this because it helps that Leaning Tower of Pisa thing.
Sort of like doing some cakes in a water bath.
Right. Oh, like cheesecake?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I should make a cheesecake,
you
too.
Should. You should. Do you need us to let you go?
Yeah.
So you can do
yeah.
that.
Sorry. Got sidetracked.
How about tips for frosting? Because I have to confess, I do all right with the baking end of it, but I just have never had the patience or the skill set to really do a good job frosting. And for years, I just told everybody that my daughter was the one frosting the cakes.
Okay.
And then she started telling on me, and so then I just stopped bringing frosted cakes.
That's
anywhere.
Almost child abuse, actually.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, well, it was all of a sudden it was cute, you know, when this kid makes something that looks like a molten teddy bear. But.
So now there's a difference between a lovely frosted cake and one of those extremely beautiful fondant cakes that my daughter makes. Like, I do not have the patience, especially if they use a pastry tube and they make those little dots all over the cake.
That's so cute.
I'm like, whatever.
It's fun for about 12 seconds.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, I like the way fondant looks, but I prefer frosting in terms of flavor.
Yeah. And so to make a really good frosting, you take about a cup of butter and beat that up really good in your mixer and then add 2 pounds of powdered sugar, but add it a cup at a time and it'll get dry and crumbly. And then you want to add a little cream or milk to that and some vanilla extract, maybe some almond extract, and whip that stuff up really, 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 really well. But before you get fancy with your cake, you should always crumb coat it. That is, like, seriously important.
So once crumb coating?
Once you get your layers down, first layer goes down on top of a pat of frosting on your cake plate to keep it from sliding. And then you fill your layers and try to get them. You know, if they're crooked, I used to have a problem trimming that top off. But now that I use those cake strips, it's a little straighter. I hate to waste the cake, you know. But that's key there, too, is get those layers straight, get them filled. And then your first layer of frosting should be very thin, and you should go completely around that whole cake with a layer of frosting. Don't mind that you have bare spots. This is called a naked cake, by the way. You put your – and you could serve it like that if you wanted to. But if you put that in the refrigerator for, you know, 30 minutes maybe, and then bring it out and then do your regular frosting, you won't get crumbs. And, it, you know, you can fill in holes with your naked frosting layer so that once you get your final frosting going there, it's nice and firm, and you can work on your swirls then instead of concentrating on keeping that cake together.
While the cake is refrigerating, do you want the frosting out at room temp or do you want the frosting?
Once you put that frosting in the refrigerator, it sets up and gets hard. So you can leave that frosting on the counter actually overnight if you want.
No, I was just going to say, well, that cake is in the refrigerator for a half hour, so you could be eating the frosting.
Right. I was going to just say just cover it up so that people don't know it's out there on the counter because, boy, buttercream frosting is almost as good as ice cream. And then on a final note here with the frosting your cake is that – every New Year's, there's a Twilight Zone marathon on FX, I think, is the channel. And I love The Twilight Zone. I mean, like, I've seen them all 1,000 times, and I will watch them anyway. And one of my favorite episodes is called The Bewitching Pool, because if you watch the one scene where the kids come up out of the swimming pool and this woman has one of them frosting this cake, that thing is enormous. I mean, it's the biggest chocolate cake I've ever seen in my life. And these kids are there licking the knives and whipping the frosting on. So just remember, that's the way to eat cake. And just have a good time with it.
Remember as well that The Twilight Zone used to be Destination TV. Rod Serling setting up the dilemma that was going to be dealt with in the rest of the show. It was always entertaining.
And they did a remake of The Twilight Zone, but I think you have to have a subscription to some channel to watch it. So I haven't seen any of those. But really, the moral of the story is the good guy always wins in The Twilight Zone.
All right. Well, we check in with Sue Balcom once a week. It's always a pleasure, Sue.
Oh, thank you, guys.
What's Happening is next.